Do you feel confident in how you go about giving and receiving love? Today, we're talking about why you experience love the way that you do, or why you give and why you receive love in the way that you do. If you'd like to find out more about how you can create and develop long-lasting, fulfilling relationships, please head over to therelationshipmaze.com. And if you'd like to find out more about our podcast, head over to therelationshipmazepodcast.com. And press subscribe now so that you can tune into every episode. Welcome to today's podcast. And today we're talking about why you experience love and why you give and why you receive love in the way that you do.
Yeah, we thought we'd start off with considering how we define love, because we had a long discussion about that. And actually, love is one of these concepts that's actually quite difficult to grasp and to grapple with. What is love? We looked at different resources that we could find, and there isn't a one way of defining what love is. So we try to kind of break it down a little bit when we talk about love. What is it that we're referring to?
Yeah, and actually, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
Maybe take a moment right now to just think of a few words that for you describe love. Mm-hmm. What is the experience of love to you? Mm-hmm. What is the experience of love when you feel love? What is the experience of love when you give love or receive it?
Yeah, because there's so many different associations with love, aren't there? It's often tied up or associated with lust or passion. That's one aspect of love. It's also associated with kindness and caring and being deeply connected to someone else. And we did a podcast a while ago on the different interpretations or understandings and concepts of love that the ancient Greeks had. So you might find that quite interesting as well to listen to that podcast, because that gives you a quite rounded view of all the different aspects of love that we can talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think today, one way that I might categorize the experience of love is in three different areas. Is we experience love in terms of emotions. So primarily we think of that emotional or the feeling that we have. So it's that sort of, you know, that experience in our body, that experience of what that emotion is like. And so much when we think of romantic love, I think that really is the feeling. Mm-hmm. We also experience it in terms of our bodies.
Mm-hmm. So biological function of love.
Yeah, biologically. So in terms of the chemical reactions, because every time we experience an emotion, there's also a chemical change in the body. Mm. So different hormones, different chemicals, a different speed of our heart rate. Yeah, everything changes when we experience different emotions. Mm. And together with that biological change, there's also physical change in even the way you stand, the way you sit, the way you breathe, the way that you act. You know, when you're in love, how do you behave differently? Mm. You know, when you wake up in the morning and you get out of bed, you know, you may spring out of bed when you have that feeling of being in love, like in so many of those movies.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and absolutely. We know that in the early stages of romantic love, when there's all this excitement, our body is flash full of lots of hormones going through the system.
Yeah.
That, you know, that do all sorts of things to our cognitions, to our thoughts. It increases our heart rate, it makes us sweat a little bit more, it makes us glow a bit more. Our skin is actually getting a bit more flush because we've got more blood pumping through the body, so our skin gets a little bit more rosy, for example, when we are in the early stages of it's more actually attraction, isn't it, than love? But we can have a long discussion about that, what it is. So some people would actually call that lust rather than love, for example.
I think that it's possible that I don't know if it's always helpful to distinguish the total boundary between these, because I think they can cross over.
Absolutely.
I think with love can stay attraction. I don't think it's necessarily one or the other myself. Mm. But again, in terms of that, how it affects your behaviour, what just came to my mind was the scene in Singing in the Rain with Gene Kelly. And if you haven't seen that, so it's just a lovely dance.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, so that sort of thing where there's an experience outside that normally you might really dislike, but somehow becomes a wonderful experience because you feel that feeling of love. And I think that brings in the other area, the third area, which is cognition.
Thoughts.
Yeah, so yeah. Thoughts.
How we think about love, because there are lots of associated thoughts. There's lots of concepts that we have about love. There are lots of stories that we tell ourselves about love.
Yeah, and in terms of, you know, things like beliefs, like what do you believe you need to do to have somebody else know that they feel loved? Or what do you believe that you need to feel loved? Mm-hmm. You know, how do you believe you need to act? What do you believe you need to do in terms of whether it's sort of buying gifts? And we talked about this in another episode in love languages. So that's also one to pay attention to. But again, in terms of cognition, again, like the singing in the rain metaphor, you know, something that normally we wouldn't like, suddenly we say to ourselves, what a wonderful experience.
Everything can be wonderful when we are in the grip of love.
Yeah. Yes. So this sort of mind, body and emotions, they all link together in a system. And when we're in love, all of these things work in a very different way.
Yes. Of course, there's also the spiritual dimension of love, that love can actually... It can create something bigger than yourself. It can even create something bigger than your relationship with someone else. It can kind of have this transcendental function that you feel you're more in tune with the universe, with nature, whatever it is that that you know, something bigger than you, that you consider to be bigger than yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the sense of sort of purpose of things beyond ourselves, love is one of these things that really often does transcend that for many people. Because we can also look at different theories of, you know, why we love. And, you know, one theory, which evolutionary biologists might consider that love is a more functional thing. That it kind of keeps us together in our pack for survival. Or it means that we kind of... It's a way of our kind of making sure we pass down our genetic code.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, which personally I don't like to think of it.
No, I know.
In those
so prosaic,
terms,
isn't it?
Yeah, yes. There may be some of that to that, but I think for most of us, you know, we have very different beliefs about that.
Yeah.
And a lot of these beliefs, again, they may come from our culture.
So there, exactly. There's the sort of cultural or sociological beliefs that. Love serves a function. It creates some cohesion, I suppose, in society when you have lots of little units coming together that then can, you know, big family tribes, for example, that can come together and create bonds between different people, etc. So it has that kind of function as well. So there are all sorts of different ways in which you can theorize love, either from a biological perspective, an evolutionary one, a sociological one, a cultural one. That's not really what we wanted to get into today, to look into that. So we're really interested also in the sort of stories that we, the narratives that we have about love, the stories that we tell ourselves about love, because they influence the way that we love, the way that we do. So they give us an idea, a script, so to speak, that we can follow about. This is how I go about loving someone else. And this is what I'm looking for in the way of wanting to be loved by someone else.
Yeah, and it might be interesting just for a moment, if you have a pen and paper handy, to just ask yourself, where did you learn about what love is or how you express love? You know, what's your earliest memories of experiencing love or witnessing love? Maybe seeing how your parents interacted with each other. Or, you know, when you were a child, what were some of the stories that you heard about love? And for many people, you know, I think with myself, it was fairy stories.
Fairy tales.
When you're really young.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
Myths and fairy stories, fairy tales. So we've all learned about handsome princes and beautiful princesses who need to be rescued and the idea of the happy ever after. That's a really powerful story, isn't it, that... Once you come together with someone else in a romantic way, you live your life in happiness forever. What a wonderful way to capture this notion of love, and what a wonderful ideal to aspire to.
Yeah, and with most of these stories as well, that to have that true love, there are great challenges that have to be overcome.
Yes.
And usually one person has to defeat the dragon or kind of overcome these huge hurdles in order to win the heart of somebody else. as though it's a prize.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, so love very often, particularly in fairy tales, is very much associated with struggle, isn't it? You don't just get it like that. You actually have to kind of work quite hard for it. You have to, as you say, you have to slay a few dragons, fight a few people, etc. So, well, actually, I mean, they're very sort of gender-specific tales as well, aren't they? It's usually the princes who have to do that, or the paupers, the poor people who aspire to richness who have to do that.
Yeah, and I think more recently, some people are rewriting fairy tales to swap the roles, which I think is interesting.
Yeah.
And I think there's some important things with this, because you know, with all great experiences in life, there are struggles.
Mm.
In no great experience, in the things you find most fulfilling in life, there are struggles at certain points.
Mm.
I think maybe the challenge with some of these early stories is some of those struggles seem to be more on the part of one person than the other.
Mm.
Whereas actually, you know, these struggles are things that we all face. And I think, you know, some of these stories may give the message that, well, if you're on that side that doesn't need to have that struggle, if you experience a struggle, well, maybe that means something's wrong.
Yes.
Maybe we think, well, you know, maybe this relationship isn't the right one, rather than seeing that, you know, that there are struggles in everything that is great.
Mm.
And in every, you know, story, true story of true love, there are periods of struggle,
absolutely,
whether that's arguments, whether it's experiences in life that are challenging.
Yeah.
But it's how you face those struggles together that can ultimately build a much more fulfilling relationship.
Yeah, so that's also the sort of the spiritual dimension, of course, of a lot of these struggles, so particular in a lot of these fairy tales or medieval tales of romance. These were also allegories about a spiritual quest, about transcending yourself, finding something greater than yourself. Very often this was manifested through the idea of union with another person, which was also a union with something, with God, with whatever you want to call it. So it's quite interesting. There's often that love in itself is a sort of, it has this sort of universal appeal as well. It's not just about romantic love in that sense.
Yeah, and very frequently it is a concept in many spiritual practices where we're taught to just experience love for other people, and you know, maybe at the beginning of the day, just to feel love for people in general, because through doing that, the idea is that it's a way to overcome some of the sort of negative sides of ourselves, and the aspects of ourselves that maybe you know aren't the most spiritually fulfilling.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
but back to this question, we're sort of addressing, but also digressing from our question: why do we love the way that we do? So we love the way that we do because we've got ideas in our heads, and not just ideas, but also ideals, a notion of what it's like to love. That love has to manifest in particular ways, either through somebody basically achieving a conquest, winning the prize, so to speak, winning the love of someone else, or through giving a lot of love, for example, just being very expressive in your love. That's the way of achieving what you ultimately, the ultimate prize. And I don't know what that ultimate prize is, but there is some idea about, I think, often associated with love, of this purity or this happiness. How do we define that? But there's something here about there's a price to be won when we experience true love. Only then can we really be fully happy in our life.
Yeah, and that ideal of true love, the question is it a realistic ideal in the first place?
Absolutely.
Because where have you learned this from? And in fact, the last podcast where I was talking to Dr. Sarah Hill, where we talked about childhood stories, again, thinking about your childhood stories, where did you learn about this ideal of love? You know, we're swamped by stories on television, even in music, fairy tales, Netflix, all these Hollywood ideals of romance, what true romance is like, that it's very difficult for people to live up to this Hollywood ideal of romance. Because some of these things, in stories, they're not necessarily how most people do experience things. Well, certainly, in terms of that quest. So, and when you don't experience that ideal, how do you feel? Mm-hmm. I mean, do you feel there's something wrong with you? Mm-hmm. Do you feel there's something wrong with the other person? Mm-hmm. Maybe you blame... And take a moment, you know, when you don't find that, do you blame yourself? Do you blame the other person?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or do you then sort of fit into these drivers, you know, this idea of you have to try harder, or you're not good enough as a person because you're not giving your partner enough love, or your partner indeed is not good enough as a person because they are not loving you the way that you want them to love you.
Yeah, and that brings in the theme of giving and receiving love. Mm. Because it's really important, and this is something I learned quite a few years ago, which I'd never thought about till I think I was talking to a therapist myself. Mm. And the idea was, you know, how readily do you receive love? Mm. So, because many people feel they're very good at giving, mm-hmm. but not so able to receive.
Yeah.
That they feel they have to constantly give. Mm. And yourself now, in terms of that question, do you feel more able to give love or more able to receive it? Mm. Or do you feel more equally balanced? Mm. Because if you're constantly giving, mm. we're not able to really experience the joy of receiving. Mm. And also think as well, you when you give and you know somebody feels loved, how good that feels to you, mm. by constantly giving and not allowing yourself to receive, you don't allow your partner to have that experience of what it's like for them to have the pleasure of giving love to you.
Yeah, so it's something to be kind of keeping an eye on and working on. It's something that can be balanced. And I think it's also back to this sort of question of ideal, is there isn't a one way, there isn't a perfect idea, there isn't a perfect love as such. There's just something that you continuously work out, improve, review as well. So it's not, you know, there isn't a set formula here. And there isn't also the one person who can give you all. So this idea of the soulmate. It's like we were watching an episode of this Netflix series, You, the other day. I don't know whether you watch it. I've always loved watching anything which is therapists in it, any kind of drama series or films. And there was a marriage counsellor in this series. It was quite interesting what she had to say in terms of the advice that she was giving. And whatever you think about it, some of it was very cheesy. But there was one thing that she said, which is actually right about, you know, it's not about finding a soulmate. It's about finding a life mate. So, you know, it's a sort of constant ongoing process to develop the love that you want. It's not ready-made, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, and I've mentioned in a previous episode, I think, is that it's not that you find a soulmate, it's that you develop together into soulmates.
Yeah.
So with that spiritual dimension, which, you know, I myself am very open to, mm. I feel that, you know, I like the concept of a soulmate, but it's not that there's one there.
Yes.
It's that it's working through your own challenges, both of you in a relationship, allows you to develop into soulmates together.
Absolutely.
Or into life mates.
Yeah.
And I think fundamentally, I don't know what you think, Angela, but I think very much the beliefs we learn when we're younger determine how readily this is possible. And
absolutely.
One very key belief, I think, is about, do you feel that you deserve love?
Mm.
Or do you feel you are able to love? Mm. Do you feel afraid of loving? But I think this question, you know, do you deserve love?
Yes,
are you
absolutely.
Worthy of love? It's a huge question.
Absolutely. And it kind of crosses over into another area that we've talked about previously, which is attachment style. Mm. So if you have an insecure attachment style, if you're either anxious, preoccupied or avoidant, dismissive in your attachment style, then you have a belief system that ultimately you can't be loved, or you can't quite trust the other person that they can really love you. So the way that you love is one that's always full of question marks and a lack of trust. Yeah. So if you're anxious, then you're very often that kind of clingy person, protesting person who needs a lot of reassurance to be told that you're actually lovable, that you deserve love, as you say. Or if you're more of the on the avoidance spectrum of attachment styles, you have this very abstract, idealized view of love and a lover, which can never be quite attained, because ultimately you think that you don't deserve the love and nobody can give you what you really need. So attachment styles, again, that's an area that we covered previously in our podcast. really are a very interesting angle as well to answer that question of why do you love the way that you do.
Yeah, and just to really clarify that, sometimes this overly idealized concept of love is the way to avoid experiencing the risk of love. So it's it's an avoidance strategy.
Absolutely.
And, you know, with an anxious style as well, I mean, it's quite natural, for example, you know, if your parents used to argue a lot and, you know, a parent used to walk out a lot or they kind of split up when you were very young, it may be natural when you're younger to blame yourself or to feel this person doesn't love you or there's something about you that isn't deserving of love. And, you know, then we develop this sort of strategy, which is, you know, we become very anxious about somebody else leaving us. And this can go through our lives.
Yeah. So when you feel like you're not deserving of love, then well, how do you behave? Of course, you constantly question anyone who crosses your path in terms of, can they actually give me love in the way that that I want to. You don't even know what you want a lot of the time, or you don't necessarily know what your needs are in that regard. But you are very questioning in the way that you love. You're very mistrusting and very careful.
Or we will go out of our ways to do everything for the other person. Yeah. We give because we desperately want love, but we don't allow ourselves to receive it because we don't feel we deserve it. Or when we do, we question it because we have this underlying belief that you don't deserve love. So we start to sabotage it.
So we become the eternal victim as well in this kind of cycle, where somebody who's avoidant often steps into the role of a perpetrator, the one who walks away from love, the one who leaves and abandons other people, the one who whose love behavior is often about leaving and withdrawing and just being on their own. Being independent is a strong theme for somebody with this attachment style.
Yeah, and I think right now, the really important message that I would encourage you to think about, and again, I'll ask if you agree with this, Angela, is these are things that you have learned.
Yes.
And the great thing is you learned them, you weren't born with them.
Exactly.
And because you've learned them, you can also learn a new way.
That's absolutely.
Or you can unlearn them, you can change them. Because what we learn, we can change, we can develop.
Yeah.
So you can change this.
Absolutely. I'm so glad that you're saying that, because I thought actually there's a really positive message in what we are trying to communicate today, which it's a hopeful message. There is hope, because everything can be changed. Your behavior can be changed, your thoughts can be changed, and you will also feel differently in your experience of love once you work at this. These are things that can be unlearned, that can be reviewed. And there's always the question that is always really helpful, really, in this context is, does the way that you are currently loving other people or receiving love from other people, does it serve you well? Does it work well for you? And if it doesn't, then maybe it's something to look at. Is there another way of going about this? Can I experience love in a very different way? Because ultimately, it's always a matter of perspective. You can change your perspective. You can look at things differently.
Yeah. And I think following on from that is, in order to really experience love in a way that you want to, perhaps, it starts with looking at yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What are your beliefs? What is your story?
Yeah.
What's your learning of love? What are the things you say to yourself? Any limiting beliefs? What is your experience of love currently? And where is this coming from within you, which may lead you to project onto other people things that aren't there?
Yes, absolutely. Because a lot of the time, and again, another podcast we talked about was about projections we have, particularly in the early stages of relationships. We don't really see the person in front of us for who they really are. We just have our own ideas and notions about love and what we need, our needs and wants projected out onto the other person. So it takes a while to really get to know the other person and have a real sense of who have I got in front of me. And is this somebody I can build this loving relationship with, the relationship that I actually deserve and the relationship that I need?
Yeah, and to do that, you have to know yourself first.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and when you really understand yourself, you can then begin to understand and know the other person more fully and distinguish whether that is the other person or whether it's what you're projecting onto them.
Yes.
Because, you know, we can't simply change our experience of how we're loved ourselves. It is to do with the other person too.
Yeah.
So we shouldn't, you know, if we've worked on ourselves and we're not receiving what we feel we need from the other person, and it's not to do with our own issues necessarily, then that needs to be negotiated and communicated together and see if you can find that way of experiencing love and giving and receiving love together in a way that works for both of you.
Absolutely, and it might also entail making the choice that this other person is not the right person for me because they're not offering me what I really need, what I deserve, what makes me feel cared for, looked after, and well in the world. Happy, if you want.
Absolutely.
That's a term that always gets bandied about. Happy, yeah.
Absolutely, and going back to what we talked about earlier, it's also knowing that part of that may involve struggle.
Mm.
So the first signs of a struggle don't mean that I'm not getting what I want. It means, can we work through this together?
Yeah.
Are you both willing to look inside yourselves, work on yourselves, and work on the relationship together to create something that's better and more fulfilling? Because the more that you end a relationship every time you get into the first time of a struggle, the less likely you are to have a more fulfilling relationship.
Absolutely, yeah. I think there's another podcast here in the pipeline that I can kind of just see take some shape, which is also the one about, you know, how getting to know yourself. How do you know yourself? How do you know what you think or feel? How do you develop this kind of self-awareness? That's another interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah.
So maybe we'll leave that for another podcast.
Great. Well, anything else you'd like to say?
No, I think we leave it at that. So a hopeful message is that if you're currently not loving or being loved in the way that you want to, then there are ways of changing that. There are ways of looking at that. There are ways of tweaking things. There are ways of telling yourself a different story about yourself, creating a different reality for yourself so that you do get what you ultimately need and want.
Absolutely. Please share this podcast with anybody that might benefit from it. And remember to tune in next week. Also, there's more information on our website, therelationshipmazepodcast.com. And just to remind you, our website, therelationshipmaze.com, has resources and also our course to help you develop a more fulfilling and long-lasting loving relationship.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really complex course, and that's something that you might want to, that you might be interested in if you really want to delve in deep, yeah, and really cover all aspects to do with relationships, because we're really trying to cover all of the bases there. So it's a very comprehensive course. I'm actually really pleased with it, sort of throwing in all of our experience as therapists and couples therapists.
Yeah, so please tune in next week, and we hope to speak to you then.
Take good care, and we'll see you then. Goodbye for now.
Bye. I hope you enjoyed this week's podcast. If you'd like to find out more about creating great relationships, go to therelationshipmaze.com, and I look forward to seeing you there. And remember to tune in to the next podcast.